good day, guys. Up here, I said, I didn't want to spend your time. Box, well, where's that? Guards, I wanted to say a word to the members of the cabinet as to how we set up this group. And then I'll give it its charge.
Unfortunately, we did not set it up. The Congress created a statutory monster.
I understand. How we, go through a little that because, you know, members of the cabinet just finished the cabinet meeting. You probably learned, well, what's this about? Is this another White House conference or is it something where we just have a meeting and forget it after? Say, can we combine food or are we going to do something?
Right, tell us about the monster and we'll find out how we move. This is the second of the four meetings that we're required to have by statute. Under Chairman Rivera's leadership, we think that we will go out immediately and have these regional meetings because you cannot. It's very difficult to have recognized the constituency in the shorter regions, Spanish speaking and Chicanos and Cubans. And we want to go into the district offices and call the regional people together with assistance by the staff and from Mrs. Hitt, their field people. And we think those will be very productive, very helpful. And this is one of the first things Henry wants to do.
You're going with it?
Yes, I understand.
Tell us a bit about your trip.
We've had one recently. We had one recently, already one session, a sort of trial one in San Francisco. You have all of the heads of all of these departments and the agencies, and we invited in students like Spade from, and I think we got a lot out of it. We learned a great deal, and then the whole name of the game is to upgrade the number of employees with Spanish speaking. We have a great number, but they're in the wrong places, and they're at the lower levels. We're trying to move them up, and I think thanks to Fred Malik, the board made a great deal of progress.
Thank you, Governor.
Yes, sir.
But now, what about activities outside of that?
No.
Limiting yourselves to the government. Well, that is, well, that's the charge. Go on beyond that.
I think our major effort thus far, we faced with, has been the bilingual program. I think in John's LEA program, we've done a better job of recruiting the Mexican community. And they, that's where we can make the major impact.
With that government,
yes.
Well, let me say to the members of the cabinet that are here and their representatives, the representatives of other agencies like the Small Business Administration, the Civil Service Commission, and others who make decisions that will affect the members of this group that are here. Now, I have said this before around this cabinet table, and there has not been enough follow-through on it. The reason there has not been enough follow-through on it has been that there has not been enough pressure from the media. There hasn't been enough pressure from the Congress. There hasn't been enough pressure from basically within the groups themselves compared with the pressures that other minority groups put on to get what they think they should have. Let me be very, very careful about this. I am not suggesting that in terms of any group that has not had an equal chance that we should not make an all-out effort to rectify that situation, and we are. We're doing, frankly, a rather outstanding job in many fields with regard to minority groups. We're even making progress. I understand that the women are minority groups. I don't know, but they do all right. But my family, nevertheless, we're doing a better job, I understand that. But let me be, coming back to the analogy that I made. In government, only those groups that raise hell and that indicate that, well, you either do something or we're going to blow the place up, get any attention. That's been the experience of this country almost from the beginning. It's been particularly the experience during the 60s and the early 70s. I do not suggest that should not therefore, should under any circumstances, just roll over and be nice guys and so forth and so on, after not complaining and not raise certain issues. I do not suggest that at all. I'm only stating the political reality. Is it whether you're dealing with the Congress against congressional action, appropriations, say, or bilateral program, or whether you're dealing with a government agency in terms of getting the proper slots, not just the menial jobs, but, and of course, they are important too. Most of us, I did, and we started with menial jobs, I think probably you did too. You don't live around in the yard, you really don't pay about it. You don't say
$100 a day.
$100 a day? You can't afford to be a
Secretary Campbell, in agriculture, you can do it. You have, but let me say that
there are a lot of prestigious positions in the state of trade and in justice jobs.
And you're looking for lawyers, and you're looking for judges.
Where do you?
And that's the other point that I'm.
I think the thing I want to get across to those who are non-governmental people in this country. I urge this, just as I urge it with all of our minority groups, just as I urge it, for example, when the people representing the women's groups came in. We're not doing this just as a favor to you. This country at this present time is in a very, very interesting position now. I think this is probably a pretty good note for me to bring my remarks to close on, to put this at a level that we all understand. Understand what the stakes are. George Romney and I just had a little colloquy at the cabinet meeting, and this will take it off. We were talking about keeping America competitive. We were talking about the fact that we're pricing ourselves out of the world markets by wage price pushes and so forth. What are we going to do to make ourselves competitive? How are we going to be more productive? Let me tell you how important it is. 25 years ago, the United States was number one in the world economically and militarily without any fear of any competition. 7% of the world's people 25 years ago in the United States produced over 50% of the world's goods. There was a dollar gap, and there wasn't anybody in the world that offered us any chance of competition. Whether it was automobiles or steel or anything else, we produced over 50% of the world's steel, mostly automobiles and the rest. We really had it. We didn't have to run very fast. We didn't have to be very competitive. We really didn't have to develop all the resources of our country. We didn't have to have all of the American people. The genius that might be in a Mexican-American, a Cuban American, or a Puerto Rican, or a Black American, or an Eastern European, as the case might be, it didn't matter whether that person who might have great leadership qualities was developed or not, because America was first, and so we can get along. In 25 years, the world has totally changed. By reason of our help, our former enemies, Japan and Germany particularly, are now our two major competitors in the free world. And boy, they are tough competition. And also, we find Western Europe, to whom we have given billions of dollars of aid to rebuild them after the war, very, very competitive with the United States of America. And with the 300 million people that will be in that common market, it will be a bigger trading area than the United States of America. It will be a kind of people that are like the people here. You'll ever go all the way in the end. Of course, Spain will get in as the rest of all of its trade drive. And you're going to find those 300 million people really competing with the United States. They'll be our friends. Believe me, the toughest competition usually I find in the world is with our friends. So you've got Western Europe with 300 million competing. You've got Japan competing with us. And then, of course, we have the new openings. We are negotiating with the Soviet Union in a number of areas. We're reducing, we think, the danger of confrontation war. We have the new openings in China. It doesn't mean that there aren't great differences between the United States. There will not continue to be great differences between mainland China and the United States, because our interests are different, our systems are different. But now we're going to talk about them. And by talking about them, negotiating about them, it may be that 20, 25 years from now, instead of having an inevitable confrontation with a huge nuclear power, we may have a negotiation, and that, of course, the stakes are high. But the other side of the coin is that as you open the silver and have more trade with them, as you open the mainland China and have more trade with them, that means the United States has another great competitor in the world. Take the Chinese, for example. There are 800 million of them. They are the most creative people, and probably, in terms of capacity, if you look at what they've done in all the countries of the world in which they operate, in Manila, in Hong Kong, in San Francisco, any place you want, the Chinese have an enormous capability, particularly in the business and economic field. And as they open up to them, you have a new competitor again. All right, how does all add up? The United States is still number one in strength. We're still number one in economic. And I think we can stay that way. But with the new players that are on this field, Western Europe inevitably will be breathing down our neck. And they're going to compete in harm. Japan, it is breathing down our neck in a number of fields. They've already run us out of the whole radio business. They're competing with us in the automobile business. There are a number of others. And of course, here's China, not at present. down the years, it will be, and of course, the Soviet Union potentially competitor. And I haven't even mentioned the growing potential in Latin America, the growing potential in Africa, and so forth. Now, what did all this add up to? The United States at the present time, if we're looking to our children, the people who will be sitting around this table in this cabinet 25 years from now, whoever is sitting here and whoever is sitting with him or her who is in this chair will be representing the second or third strongest country economically in the world, unless America develops all its resources to the hills. In other words, we cannot afford any lease. That means we've got to develop the heartland of this country. That's why we're going out and developing rural America again, you know. That's what, because we've got to have the production. That's why we've got to be competitive in our business. That's why the government has to be slimmed down and made more efficient. Also, above everything else, we've got to develop the human resources of this country. There are only 200 million Americans. There are 800 million Chinese, 300 million Europeans, 150 million Japanese, and of course, millions of others in the other parts of the world. But this is numbers that really count so much as it is quality. But America cannot afford to have, and using it, tens of millions of people in the, among the people of Spanish or Latin background, have them not operating up to their full capacity. In other words, the ideal of this country must be that every American, whatever his background, has an equal opportunity to develop to the full his capabilities. If he can be the best lawyer in town, he's got to have the chance to be that lawyer. If he's the man that can be the judge, he's got to have the chance to be the judge. If he's the man that can, in any government field, if he's the poet that can be a GS-14 rather than a 13 or up the line or whatever, he's got to have that chance. Because we cannot afford to have any group in this society, any group in this country, not having their equal chance to develop their capabilities to the fullest. Now he comes back to government. Why does government have such a great responsibility? It has a great responsibility because, as far as the private sector is concerned, it, and this has always been true in our society, it does not move as fast in developing opportunities for promotion, et cetera, for what are called minority groups, as government can. Whether you look at the Eastern Europeans, whether you look at the Irish, whether you look at others through the years, their first move, significantly enough, was into government, and then later they developed the capacity in the private field. And so what we must do in government is to provide the opportunities that may not presently be available in the private sector. So they were going to push private enterprise and so forth to do their part. But what we must do in government is to make sure that here, where there are many opportunities, where there is great need for great talent, that people who are represented so well by the non-governmental people around this room, or people like that, have a chance where they don't have the paid wealth. Because I don't happen to be an Englishman, because I happen to be a Mexican American, or a Puerto Rican, or a Cuban American, I really don't have that equal chance. Well, that's going to change. It's either going to change, or the people in the personnel offices in every department represented around this table are going to change. But you've got to take the initiative. I just close with this one thing. Don't wait. Don't wait. And this is said particularly to civil service, said to everyone in the cabinet. Don't wait till the wheels freeze. Don't wait till they blow something up out of Los Angeles because they're, with justification, frustrated. But get out there and provide the opportunity so that there is not even one scintilla of a suggestion, not only that we are discriminatory, but I want to turn it around. I want to say that not only are we not discriminatory, but that we are making positive moves to rectify a situation in which an imbalance has occurred because the groups involved have been law-abiding people who have just put their trust in the fact that in this country everybody is destined to get an equal party. Now, that is true. There's a better chance of this country, and I conclude with this fact, than in any other country that I know, for an individual to get an equal break and to go to the top and to have his abilities recognized. But I simply say that we in government have a great opportunity here. We've got an exciting, strong group of people, millions of them, who have great abilities, untapped abilities, who can make an enormous contribution to this country. It's our job to seek them out. It's our job to find them. It's our job then to promote them and to give them that chance. And if we can get that kind of a spirit around here, this will help. You're to follow up, Bob, and this needs to follow up. Not only with this one meeting, we've made the little talk, we've made the pitch, and I've tried to make it before, but the only way it's going to work in the future is to have at other meetings of this group. I want to have reports, and I've already talked to you about it, I want to have reports from him, of course, and from you as the progress has been made, and also we want reports as to what our failures have been. Because if they say that nothing happens here unless there is presidential backing, I think I have been quite clear as to where the president stands on this. We expect all of you to follow through. Thank you very much.
Success that will bring us out of some of the past.